Hi there, this is Cale Clark. Welcome back to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. We're looking at the books of the Maccabees, which are the Old Testament readings for this week in the liturgy, in the Divine Liturgy, in the Mass. And we're going to look at today one of the most famous accounts in the entire Bible, the martyrdom of seven sons and their mother. It is a tragic story. It is also a very powerful story, an inspiring account. Let's look it up right now and read it together. And you can find this in 2 Maccabees chapter 7. 2 Maccabees 7. Now let's read it together. It happened also that seven brothers and their mother were arrested and were being compelled by the king, under torture with whips and cords, to partake of unlawful swine's flesh. One of them, acting as their spokesman, said, "What do you intend to ask and learn from us? For we are ready to die rather than transgress the laws of our fathers." The king fell into a rage and gave orders that pans and cauldrons be heated. These were heated immediately, and he commanded that the tongue of their spokesman be cut out, and that they scalp him and cut off his hands and feet, while the rest of the brothers and the mother looked on. When he was utterly helpless, the king ordered them to take him to the fire, still breathing, and to fry him in a pan. The smoke from the pan spread widely, but the brothers and their mother encouraged one another to die nobly, saying, "The Lord God is watching over us, and in truth has compassion on us, as Moses declared in his song, which bore witness against the people to their faces, when he said, 'And he will have compassion on his servants.'" After the first brother had died in this way, they brought forward the second for their sport. They tore off the skin of his head with the hair and asked him, "Will you eat rather than have your body punished limb by limb?" He replied in the language of his fathers and said to them, "No." Therefore he in turn underwent tortures as the first brother had done. And when he was at his last breath, he said, "You accursed wretch, you dismiss us from this present life, but the King of the universe will raise us up to an everlasting renewal of life, because we have died for his laws." After him, the third was the victim of their sport. When it was demanded, he quickly put out his tongue and courageously stretched forth his hands and said nobly, "I got these from heaven, and because of his laws, I disdain them. And from him, I hope to get them back again." As a result, the king himself and those with him were astonished at the young man's spirit, for he regarded his sufferings as nothing. When he too had died, they maltreated and tortured the fourth in the same way. And when he was near death, he said, "One cannot but choose to die at the hands of men, and to cherish the hope that God gives of being raised again by him. But for you, there will be no resurrection to life." Next, they brought forward the fifth and maltreated him. But he looked at the king and said, "Because you have authority among men, mortal though you are, you do what you please. But do not think that God has forsaken our people. Keep on and see how his mighty power will torture you and your descendants." After him, they brought forward the sixth. And when he was about to die, he said, "Do not deceive yourself in vain, for we are suffering these things on our own account, because of our sins against our own God. Therefore, astounding things have happened. But do not think that you will go unpunished for having tried to fight against God." The mother was especially admirable and worthy of honorable memory. Though she saw her seven sons perish within a single day, she bore it with good courage because of her hope in the Lord. She encouraged each of them in the language of their fathers, filled with a noble spirit. She fired her woman's reasoning with a man's courage and said to them, "I do not know how you came into being in my womb. It was not I who gave you life and breath, nor I who set in order the elements within each of you. Therefore, the Creator of the world, who shaped the beginning of man and devised the origin of all things, will in his mercy give life and breath back to you again, since you now forget yourselves for the sake of his laws. Antiochus felt that he was being treated with contempt, and he was suspicious of her reproachful tone. The youngest brother being still alive, Antiochus not only appealed to him in words, but promised with oaths that he would make him rich and enviable if he would turn away from the ways of his fathers, and that he would take him for his friend and entrust him with public affairs. Since the young man would not listen to him at all, the king called the mother to him and urged her to advise the youth to save himself. After much urging on his part, she undertook to persuade her son. But leaning close to him, she spoke in their native tongue as follows, deriding the cruel tyrant. "My son, have pity on me. I carried you 9 months in my womb and nursed you for 3 years and have reared you and brought you up to this point in your life and have taken care of you. I beg you, my child, to look at the heaven and the earth and see everything that is in them and recognize that God did not make them out of things that existed. Thus also mankind comes into being. Do not fear this butcher, but prove worthy of your brothers. Accept death, so that in God's mercy I may get you back again with your brothers." While she was still speaking, the young man said, "What are you waiting for? I will not obey the king's command, but I obey the command of the law that was given to our fathers through Moses. But you, who have contrived all sorts of evil against the Hebrews, will certainly not escape the hands of God. For we are suffering because of our own sins, and if our living Lord is angry for a little while to rebuke and discipline us, he will again be reconciled with his own servants. But you, unholy wretch, you most defiled of all men, do not be elated in vain and puffed up by uncertain hopes when you raise your hand against the children of heaven. You have not yet escaped the judgment of the Almighty, all-seeing God. For our brothers, after enduring a brief suffering, have drunk of ever-flowing life under God's covenant. But you, by the judgment of God, will receive just punishment for your arrogance. I, like my brothers, give up body and life for the laws of our fathers, appealing to God to show mercy soon to our nation, and by afflictions and plagues to make you confess that he alone is God, and through me and my brothers to bring an end to bring to an end the wrath of the Almighty, which has justly fallen on our whole nation." The king fell into a rage and handled him worse than the others, being exasperated at his scorn. So he died in his integrity, putting his whole trust in the Lord. Last of all, the mother died after her sons. Let this be enough, then, about the eating of sacrifices and the extreme tortures. You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. We're looking at the books of the Maccabees. We just read 2 Maccabees, chapter 7, one of the more famous tales in the entire Bible about the martyrdom of a woman and her seven sons at the hands of the wicked king, Antiochus IV Epiphanes. All right, so once again, 2 Maccabees is really a summary of five other books that were written by a guy named Jason of Cyrene, who was a Jew who lived in the second century before Christ. And so here's how the second book of Maccabees actually describes itself. If we look at chapter 2, it talks about how this book came to be. It says, "The story of Judas Maccabeus and his brothers," this is chapter 2, verse 19 and following, "the story of Judas Maccabeus and his brothers, and the purification of the great temple, and the dedication of the altar, and further the wars against Antiochus Epiphanes and his son Eupator, and the appearances which came from heaven to those who strove zealously on behalf of Judaism, so that, though few in number, they seized the whole land and pursued the barbarian hordes and recovered the temple, famous throughout the world, and freed the city and restored the laws that were about to be abolished, while the Lord with great kindness became gracious to them. All this, which has been set forth by Jason of Cyrene in five volumes, we shall attempt to condense into a single book, For considering the flood of numbers involved and the difficulty there is for those who wish to enter upon the narratives of history, because of the mass of material, we have aimed to please those who wish to read, to make it easy for those who are inclined to memorize, and to profit all readers. For us who have undertaken the toil of abbreviating, it is no light matter, but calls for sweat and loss of sleep, just as it is not easy for one who prepares a banquet and seeks the benefit of others. However, to secure the gratitude of many, we will gladly endure the uncomfortable toil. Okay, and it goes on to say a few more things, but so they're basically doing us a favor. Those who compiled the book of 2 Maccabees, it's really a condensed version, a précis, if you will, of five other books about this that were written by Jason of Cyrene. And so let's talk now about this famous account of the martyred mother and her seven sons. And it really is one of the more famous passages in all of Scripture. And no doubt parts of this were taken from those earlier works by Jason of Cyrene. And so let's talk about this a little bit. And there's a great scholar named Dr. Malka Simkovich, who teaches at the Catholic Theological Union in Chicago. And she wrote about this particular passage and what might be in the background and maybe what inspired the mother. Because the mother of the seven sons who were tortured terribly in front of her, and I can't imagine the agony of watching not only your child suffer, but your child be tortured times seven in front of you and have them be martyred, and yet to still hold on to hope in God. It is a powerful, powerful witness. And that's really what the word martyr means. Remember, in Greek, it means witness. And it's a witness to the truth. And so Antiochus IV, this evil king, wanted them to eat pork, again, break the dietary laws, consume non-kosher meat. And we don't know what this mother's name was. Later on in history, in the 16th century, some Jewish writers started calling her Hannah. But we don't actually know what her name was. And there's a reason probably why they started calling her Hannah. We're going to get into that in just a second. But the mother bravely encourages her sons to hold on to their faith, even if it means their own martyrdom, even if it means their own grisly death. And there are two speeches that the mother gives that talk about, really from a theological perspective, where she was coming from and what gave her and her sons the strength to die, to give their life for the truth of God. So she gives two little speeches. One is about resurrection, the hope of the resurrection. The other one is about how God created the world out of nothing. And she really uses those as anchors, and we can use them too in our own lives. And it's a direct refutation. It's a slap in the face of the pagan views of people like Antiochus, and really the pagan views of today as well. And as Malka Simkovich explains, there are also two women of the Old Testament that also are in the background inspiring this mother, this Maccabean mother, whose children are martyred, and she herself is as well. So we'll get into that in just a second. But let's look at the two speeches that the mother gives. And so right before her youngest son is killed, now Antiochus is executing her sons one after another, starting with the oldest, working down to the youngest. And just before her youngest son is martyred, the mother makes her first speech, and she encourages him to allow himself to be martyred rather than to violate the truths of his faith. And this is what she says, and this is in 2 Maccabees 7, verses 22 and 23. "I do not know how you came into being in my womb. It was not I who gave you life and breath, nor I who set in order the elements within each of you. Therefore, the creator of the world, who shaped the beginning of humankind and devised the origin of all things, will in his mercy," listen to this, "give life and breath back to you again, since you now forget yourselves for the sake of his laws." So what's going on here is that this mother is encouraging her son with the Jewish belief in the resurrection at the end of time. And so again, this is before the time of Jesus. We have lots more to go on in terms of resurrection, obviously Jesus' own resurrection, than she had to go on. So this is incredible. But the Greeks, and of course King Antiochus would have been thinking like a pagan Greek here, the Greeks did not believe in the resurrection. They did not believe in that. And remember when St. Paul went to Athens in his missionary journeys, you can read about this in Acts of the Apostles, chapter 17. They mock St. Paul because he's teaching about the resurrection. They scoffed at him. And not only did many pagans not believe in this, but even some Jews didn't believe in this. The Sadducees, that's why they were so sad, you see. They didn't believe in angels. They didn't believe in an afterlife. They didn't believe in the resurrection. And one of the reasons why they didn't believe that, and don't forget, they had this huge dispute with Jesus about this. And one of the places you can read about this is in Mark chapter 12. Remember, they come up to Jesus and they give Jesus this crazy scenario about seven brothers who were married to the same woman, not at the same time, but they were practicing what was known as the Levirate law of marriage. We have to raise up children for your dead brother. That was a thing that Jews practiced in the past. But the brothers keep dying, and their question to Jesus is, well, at the resurrection, since they're all married to her at some point in life, whose wife is she going to be? They're basically trying to make the doctrine of the resurrection look foolish, and Jesus absolutely takes them apart. And some people think that the Sadducees were referring to this particular story. I don't think so, but the only link here is that there's seven brothers. But at any rate, the resurrection is certainly a key part of this, and the Sadducees didn't believe in the resurrection. Part of the reason why is because they had become heavily influenced by pagan ideals themselves. So that's a great warning for us. That's a great warning for us because we too, as Catholics today, we can be influenced by paganism. There are lots of people that want to introduce pagan views into the Catholic Church and convince Catholics to adopt them. We have to keep our faith pure and free from these ideas. We've got to remain faithful to the teaching of Christ ourselves. So that's speech number one that the mother gives. And you're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. We're looking at 2 Maccabees chapter 7, one of the scripture readings for this week on 2 Maccabees at the Mass readings. And we're looking at what this mother who is martyred along with her seven sons for the truth of God, what speeches she gave. Well, how did she encourage her sons to embrace martyrdom and not run away from it? The second speech that the mother gives, first one's on the resurrection. The second thing she does is talk about how God created all things out of nothing. This is what's known as creation ex nihilo. And the scholar, Dr. Malka Simkovich from the Catholic Theological Union in Chicago, she talks about the second speech that the mother gives, which is about the topic of creation ex nihilo, that is, creation out of nothing. And she encourages her last living son to accept martyrdom because of this. And basically what's happening here is that King Antiochus Epiphanes, this wicked king, he can't believe that all these guys are giving their lives just because they won't eat pork and they're being tortured in grisly ways and enduring it. And he tries to convince the last son, the youngest son, to save himself. He tries to bribe him. He says, look, if you just do what I'm telling you to do, we'll be besties, we'll be best friends, we'll hang out. I'm going to give you a cushy government job, and this is going to be great. Don't do this. Don't be foolish like your brothers. And he even pulls the mom aside, says, can you please talk some sense into your son here? And she says, I'll be back. And then she goes and whispers to her son and encourages him to remain faithful to the truth. And this is what she says. She says, my son, have pity on me. And this is in 2 Maccabees chapter 7, verse 27 and following. My son, have pity on me. I carried you for 9 months in my womb and nursed you for 3 years and have reared you and brought you up to this point in your life and have taken care of you. I beg you, my child, to look at the heaven and the earth and see everything that is in them, and recognize that God did not make them out of things that existed. And in the same way, the human race came into being. Do not fear this butcher, but prove worthy of your brothers. Accept death, so that in God's mercy I may get you back again along with your brothers. And so not only the doctrine of creation, but also the doctrine of the resurrection is there too. And so the Greeks completely did not believe in this. The Greeks did not believe that God created the world out of nothing. They thought that the world was eternal. They thought that matter was always around. It always existed. And Aristotle, the famous philosopher, talked about this in the 4th century before Christ. And so Antiochus believed this, all the Hellenists believed this. And this mother says, no, they're wrong. Dr. Aristotle is nuts, because God made everything out of nothing, the one true God that the Jews worshipped. And so this is a huge, huge point, two major teaching points, the resurrection and the fact that God created everything out of nothing. He can recreate us again. He can bring us back together again in the resurrection. He certainly can do that. And so that's what the mother does in 2 Maccabees 7, these great speeches. But as Dr. Simkovich points out, there are two other passages in the Old Testament, two other women in the Old Testament, and their speeches, their actions, really this mother draws upon them. So it pays off to know your scriptures. And one of them is Hannah. And maybe that's why later writers called this woman, this Maccabean woman, maybe that's why they gave her the name Hannah, because in 1 Samuel chapter 2, Hannah promises God that though she is barren, if she is able to conceive a son, she will dedicate her son to serve God for his whole life. The second woman that this kind of draws upon is a woman who is mentioned in Jeremiah chapter 15. Now, this is a different story. This is a suffering mother, because when the Babylonians invaded Jerusalem, destroyed the temple, carried the Jews off into exile, they eventually come back, and that's where they are right now in this Maccabean time, and now they're being oppressed by another ruler. That lament of this mother really factors in as well. So let's look at Hannah's psalm that you can find in 1 Samuel chapter 2. A lot of the same themes. Hannah praises God. She says that he is the creator of the world. He can give life. And so Hannah is really praising God for the conception of her son Samuel. And she says, really, no matter what, humans have their plans, but God's will always prevails in the end. And this is what you can read here in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 5 through 8. Hannah says, those who were full have hired themselves out for bread, but those who are hungry are fat with spoil. The barren has borne 7, but she who has many children is forlorn. The Lord kills and brings to life. He brings down to Sheol, and that's the place of the dead. He brings down to Sheol and raises up. Well, hope of the resurrection there. The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low. He also exalts. He raises up the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with princes and inherit a seat of honor. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and on him and on them he has set the world. So what's referenced there in Hannah's prayer is a mother who has 7 children. And then she kind of contrasts that with a mother who loses 7 children. And that's probably why this woman in 2 Maccabees chapter 7, this martyred woman, is later called Hannah. The Lord kills and brings to life. He brings down to Sheol and raises up. So what's being said here? God is the author of life and death. The mother that we see, she says in this great speech that she gives, the first speech, she says, God is the one who gave me my sons. God gave them all life. And so I really don't have the right to argue about when it is time for them to give their lives for God, because God holds the keys of life and death. This is what it says in the book of Revelation, that Jesus Christ holds the keys of death and of Hades. And so again, this idea that Hannah in the Old Testament says God will raise up, that again looks forward to the resurrection. That is crucial to this mother, this martyred mother, to her belief, the ability to get through this. The resurrection keeps her faithful. And ultimately, yes, this is tragic. This is absolutely, from a human perspective, it's horrific. But she has not lost hope because of the truth of the resurrection. And Hannah, she says, of course, in the book of Samuel, that God will right all the wrongs. Everyone who breaks the commandments of God, they're not going to get away with it. They will be punished. And those who follow righteous paths in the world, they will receive rewards. And that's crucial, too, in the time of the Maccabees, because it looked like, for all the world, that King Antiochus was getting away with it. And how many tyrants in the world's history has it seemed that they're getting away with their evil? Well, even if though they might escape the courts of earthly justice, they will not escape the hands of God, and he will mete out his just punishments. And so God will not be mocked in any way. The other passage in the Bible that's in the background here is in Jeremiah chapter 15, where the prophet is really grieving over how Jerusalem has been vanquished by the Babylonians. And he basically says that this is God allowing this to happen because the people have sinned against him. And in a sense, this is their punishment. And it talks about in Jeremiah 15, a woman, and really many women of Jerusalem, their husbands, their sons have been killed in this rebellion. And it talks about a mother who had seven children and lost them. And you can read about this in Jeremiah chapter 15. A lot of parallels here. So the question of suffering is crucial here. The hope of the resurrection is also there. And the brothers talk about this too, the martyred brothers of the Maccabean, the sons of the Maccabean woman. They talk about how they mock the king. They said, listen, you know, God is allowing this to happen to us because of sin. And in a sense, we kind of deserve this, but you will not escape his judgment. At least we will be reconciled with him. We will be resurrected. And so this is really, really important because St. Paul says in the New Testament, if judgment is going to begin with the household of God, with the people of God, what's going to happen to everybody else? That's in essence what he says. And so get right with God is the message. So lots of similarities with these two Old Testament passages in Samuel and in Jeremiah. Both talk about mothers of seven, both reference mothers who lose their children, but both of those Old Testament texts say that God is in total control over human history, and he will bring about a resurrection. He will vindicate his people. We're going to have to leave it there, but in the next episode, as we look at the Maccabean literature, the books of the Maccabees, so exciting, we're going to talk about the great military leader. They should make a movie about this guy, Judas Maccabeus, the Hammer. How does he start this guerrilla war that frees the people and defeats the evil king? We're going to find out about it in the next episode of The Faith Explained. Until then, I'm your host, Cale Clark. God bless you. We'll catch you in the next episode. Peace.